Should we start recording? Okay, good evening. Thanks for joining for messages from the Midrash. We're in Midrash Tanhuma, Parshat Lech Lecha, which is an action-filled Parsha as we begin to really see the roots of our ancestors. First couple Parshios deal with humanity at large. And now we get a little bit of the story of how the Jewish people came to be. So we meet Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is famous for discovering or rediscovering the idea of monotheism and spreading it. And in that sense, the Midrash opens up with a very powerful halachic idea that comes from this. To be honest, I'd never heard this before, but I enjoyed it a lot, and I hope you will as well. So, of course, the parsha begins, V'yomer Hashem el Avraham lech lecha. Hashem says to Avraham, lech lecha, go forth. In itself, a very powerful phrase. So the Midrash begins, Yilamadenu Rabbeinu, our master may teach us, please teach us. Adam Yisrael, mahu shekabel alav malchut shamayim shehu mahalach. So the question that gets asked is, can a person be accept upon themselves the yoke of heaven while they are walking? So Kabbalah's Malchut Shamayim is identified as Shema. So, of course, at first, it seems like this halacha, what does this have to do with Avram? We're talking about Avram. We're not talking about Shema. Shema does not come up in Sefer Bereishit. So what does this have to do with Kabbalah's Malchut Shamayim? So let's get a little bit into the halacha and we'll make the connection. So the question is, again, can we say Shema while we're walking? That is the question.
Walking.
So Rav Edi, Rav Huna b'shem Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef b'shem Rabbi Shmuel Amru, Asur kabel alav o malchut shamayim k'shehu mahalach. A person cannot accept upon themselves the yoke of heaven while they're walking, because when you're walking, so you might be looking out at the road, or you're looking around at what's going on. You have to watch your step. But, you know, so walking sort of demonstrates perhaps a lack of focus. Interestingly, nowadays, we talk about how sometimes, you know, some of our good thinking happens when we're taking a walk. But as we'll see, there's something important about standing for Shema. So a person should, let me just get my pointer here. The person should stand still, directing his heart heavenward in trepidation and fear and trembling in reverence. Okay, so yeah, walking maybe sometimes is conducive to thinking, but there is something to be said for the fact that when we stand still or we sit and we muster our energy and focus, so we're not looking around and we're not paying attention to where we're going, but we're just really in that moment saying Shema. So the answer is that when you're saying that pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, so you're supposed to be stationary in one place. And then you say, Shema Yisrael, Shema Elokeinu, Shema Echad. Kol Echad Ve'Echad B'Chavanas Halev. You have to say it with the utmost concentration in a heartfelt manner. So that's a general thing in terms of Shema, that we tend to emphasize the first pasuk. All three parshios of Shema are required to be said to a Raisa, but it's that first pasuk where we're declaring Hashem is one, and that we are Mekabel O Malchut Shamayim, that we accept the yoke of heaven, that we have to have the utmost concentration. And again, we can't be doing anything else. We can't even be walking, but we just have to be really sort of focused in the moment, not paying attention to anything else around us. And then after that, after you say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchut Olam Ve'ed, Shemachzio Ve'ahavta, when you start Ve'ahavta, Ratza Mehalech, Ratza Omed, Ratza Yoshev. So if you want, you can walk, you can stand, you can sit. Based on the pasuk, so later on in Ve'ahavta, it says that we're supposed to say these words as we are sitting at home and we're walking, when we're traveling, when we're lying down, when we get up. So the halacha is that for the rest of Shema, you're allowed to say it while you're walking, but the first pasuk you have to say it. When you are stationary. So this comes up in the very third Mishnah. I think it's the third Mishnah in Shas. So this was actually a debate between Hillel and Shammai. So it's interesting the Tanhuma doesn't quote it in that sense. So this gets discussed this gets discussed there. But this is about Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim. And then the Midrash continues. Atamotze kol hamidaktek al hamitzvos. Somebody who is exact, meticulous in doing mitzvos. Schara merubah. They have a great reward. Sheken matzina b'Avraham shediktek al hamitzvos. Avraham was meticulous in observing mitzvos. Lefichach nikra ohavo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, he's called the loved one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sheneemar zera Avraham ohavi. The seed of Avraham, my beloved. So Avraham's called beloved. So why is he beloved? So Midrash explains here that Avraham was beloved because he was meticulous in doing mitzvos, as we see with Avraham. Okay, the Midrash goes on to say he was so meticulous in doing mitzvos that even mitzvos derabanan he kept. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman mani Amar Rabbi Yochanan afil erev tafshilin shamru beveso Avraham Avinu. So we have the halacha that comes up every couple of years on Yontif. If Yontif goes into Shabbos Chol Hamoed, or you have a first day of Yontif on Friday, second day of Yontif on Shabbos, so in order to prepare from Yontif to Shabbos, you have to do an Erev Tafshilin. You have to have set aside, we should do an egg and a challah, cooked food and a baked food, and you make the bracha before Yontif. So Avraham did even that. And this is based on the pasuk, Shenemar Vishmar Mishmarti Mitzvotai Chukutai Torotai. So Hashem says to Yitzchak that Avraham was one who kept listened to my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So what's the Torah that he kept? What's the Torah that he kept? There's only one Torah. It was really two questions. Number one, did Avraham keep the Torah? So that's one question we'll discuss in a second. But second, there are multiple Torahs. Why does it say Toros? So the answer is, Elu diktekei mitzvos shediktek Avraham. So not only did Avraham keep the mitzvos, but he was so meticulous that he kept even mitzvos he didn't necessarily have to keep, even mitzvos derabanan, even things that seem like that they're sort of minor details he kept. So you were meticulous with mitzvos, and you were sitting among idol worshippers. Same Ibnahim, get out from among them. You have to go somewhere else. Therefore, you should leave. Okay, so in this midrash, we saw a couple of things. Number one, we saw a question of whether you're allowed to say Shema while you're walking, or whether you have to be or whether you have to be stationary in one place. So that was the first part of the midrash. The second part talks about Diktuke mitzvos, that Avraham was meticulous in mitzvos. Which brings into the whole question, of course, did Avraham keep the Torah? And this leads into Lach Lecha. So what's going on in this Midrash? So I think there's a few ideas. So first of all, again, what does the Halacha of Shema have to do with this Midrash? So I think one thing we can understand is that Avraham leaving Ur is an act of Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim. That's the ultimate. Remember, Avraham was given 10 tests. This is an early one. This was an early trial of his. So Avraham's listening to Hashem's voice when he didn't necessarily know what was going to be. He was told to go to a strange land, and nonetheless, he picked up and he had his faith in Hashem, and he picked up and left. So that's an act of accepting Hashem upon himself, and the act of Lach Lecha is Mahalech. So I think there you kind of have that connection that this very moment of Lach Lecha is an act of Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim when he was walking. So I see a little bit of that connection. The question is also an example of Diktuk Bar Mitzvos while he's traveling. So in this process of being the Kaba Ol Malchus Shamayim, in this process of accepting Hashem upon himself while he's traveling, he's asking this question, which is a little bit of a detail in the mitzvah, right? So you might say, okay, it's good enough that he's going to say Shema. So what does it matter if he's standing or walking or sitting or lying down or whatever? But you see that even in his very act of accepting upon him, in the very act of accepting Hashem upon himself, he's concerned with Diktuk Bar Mitzvos. There are others who point out that this whole question of whether you can say Shema while you're walking has to do with concentration. And for us, it's easy to find a moment to concentrate on God on some level because we don't have to deal with the very fundamental aspects of God's existence. I mean, many of us do. There are people who struggle with that, but it's not so new under the sun. It's things that in some cases we do it because our ancestors did it. In other cases, it's because we know other people did it, but we're not the ones who have to take that. We don't have to take the same leap of faith that Avraham had to take. So for Avraham, while he's among Avdei Avodah Zarah, he's totally surrounded by people who don't believe in God. So he's the one who is, you know, who's blazing that path for us to believe in one God. And perhaps it took a little bit more time for him to really solidify that, to be confident, to be certain about that, when he's going up against a bunch of naysayers. Nobody else has done this before. So in order to have that level of concentration that Yishuv HaDaat, that sense of being settled, so perhaps Avram was not ready yet to be fully mekabel omachut shemayim until this moment. Only when he was truly, truly accepted Hashem's sovereignty was he able to go. Before he had to stay where he was, in order to go forward with God's mission, he really had to be fully in. Right? So in some ways, for you know, for those who grew up from, things can be a little bit simpler. The hard work's done for us. And even for those of us who are Baalei Tshuva, the people around us who have done it. If we think about it from the American context, in this generation, we have things pretty easy. Kosher restaurants are there, and yeshivas are there, and the like. There were previous generations where the Nisayon was just creating any sort of foundation of Yiddishkeit in America, where there weren't day schools, there were kosher restaurants, so you had to work on Shabbos and the like. So, you know, in some ways we can sort of relate in that aspect that the Kabbalah's Omach Lushamayim today is different than it was in earlier generations. There's a Hasidic interpretation that before Avram leaves, so he was in a he was staying in Ur, he was stationary in Ur because he had a little bit of that. Maybe perhaps he had emphasized that fear of God, but once he was able to love God, also that's the opportunity that he's able to leave. Right, Lech Lecha Me'aretzecha Ve'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha. Right, Shema, you have to say while you're stationary. Ve'ahavta, you can say while you're walking. So Avram was only able to go once he got past the yira, once he got past the fear, and was able to love Torah. So that's one thing that this midrash discusses. Of course, the question comes up whether the Avos kept the Torah, because then we go on to discuss how Avram kept the Torah. He was Mekdashik, but Mitzvos. So did the Avos keep the Torah? So that could be a whole shiur unto itself. But the easiest approach to square, in my opinion, that's found in the sources, is that through Ruach HaKodesh, through a divine connection that the Avos had, so they chose to keep many of the Mitzvos. And maybe the different approaches, maybe they didn't keep all of them. Maybe outside of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have to keep them. Maybe not the negative ones. So that perhaps there are different situations that come up in Bereishis where it's like, well, if the Avos kept the Torah, so then how did Yaakov marry two sisters? So he was outside Eretz Yisrael, and those are negative commandments. But even if we don't take Torah too literally, the notion of accepting Hashem's values, Hashem's commandments, that aspect of it is certainly there. And for all we know, maybe Avram did put on Tzvon. Okay. The Midrash mentions the idea of Erev Tavshilin, that the example given of Dichot Mitzvos is Erev Tavshilin. So the commentary on the Ein Abedolach explains that, can't read my notes here. He explains that it's important to engage and to do a mitzvah because it's a mitzvah, right? That's a complicated thing we do in life. On the one hand, we should do mitzvahs because we love them. We enjoy them. They should give us a good feeling. But there's also an aspect that we don't just do mitzvahs to enjoy them. We also do them because God commanded. Right? It shouldn't be my choosing to do a mitzvah shouldn't be conditional on whether or not I like it or a lot. Right? It's a conversation that you know that we have with students sometimes is that you know yeah we want to make school interesting and fun for them, but not every lesson and not every drill in doing, in reading a pasuk and finding the shorash in the word there's always intersecting that doesn't give you the option not to do it. So same thing with mitzvahs. And the thing about Erev Tavshilin is Erev Tavshilin prepares us to have Onik Shabbos, which is a mitzvah that we enjoy. So Onik Shabbos is a mitzvah that we can do easily because we enjoy it. But Avraham's challenge was to do Erev Tavshilin not just because he enjoyed Shabbos and eating Shabbos food, but because it's also a mitzvah, right? Which is a very powerful thing to think about for us. Rabbi Eliezer Melamed talks about this in Panini Halacha, that that of course the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos, of eating meals on Shabbos, is something that can come naturally for us. But part of the challenge is to recognize, when we sit down at the table and we eat, to recognize that we're doing it because it's Shabbos. It's not just to fill our stomachs, in which case that's just something that we purely enjoy, but it's not necessarily a mitzvah. But when we partake in Onik Shabbos because it's a mitzvah, so again, hopefully, you know, the hitter aspect of it is enjoying it, but also recognizing that it's because of Hashem. And finally, the Midrash says that the that Avraham was medaktik b'mitzvos, and once Hashem saw that Avraham was medaktik b'mitzvos because surrounded by people who were not, who were people who denied Hashem, so that's when he says, get out of here, lechacha. I think there's an important message there that's important to provide ourselves with the proper environment for doing mitzvos. You need both the motivation to do it. Avraham was obviously largely motivated because he could have given it up easily. We also need the proper environment. You need the support. So doesn't mean that, of course, that one chas v'shalom shouldn't have friends who aren't necessarily shomrei Torah mitzvot, but it's also important for our own avodas Hashem to be surrounded by people who appreciate our shmirat mitzvot, who respect what we do. Not even, it's not even necessarily about, you know, does my friend or my neighbor also keep mitzvot, but do they respect the fact that I do it? That's a big part. Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Haim at the very, very beginning, I'm going to try to pull it up very quickly right now. So at the very, very beginning, so the Ramah quotes the pasuk Chivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, Hashem is with me before me, and a klal gadol of the Torah is that everything we do is before Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, "Lo'i bayesh b'pnei Adam hamalgim alav be'avodas Hashem," that we shouldn't be embarrassed by people who mock people who do avodas Hashem. Right? So that's in the very first eve of Shulchan Aruch. That's a message at Avraham that Hashem wanted to give to Avraham very early on, that it was important for him to be in an environment where he's not going to be surrounded by people who mock him. So it's time for him to go to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Let's keep going. We'll see. We'll go till 8:30, 8:35. So try to plan number of different midrashim, but we'll see what makes sense. Okay, so in Siman Dalet, the fourth midrash Tanhuma, so it goes through the pasuk. Let's pull up the full pasuk here. It's probably helpful. We're in Genesis 12. It's 12 too. I'll make you to a great nation. I will bless you. And I'll make your name great, and you will be for a bracha. So I will bless you. So Midrash picks up, Shani Michvori Mevarcha, that I in my glory will bless you. Right? So in general, when it comes to mitzvahs, we have a principle that mitzvah bo yotemi b'shulcho, that it's better to do a mitzvah on your own than to have a shaliach do it. So there's sometimes where you point a shaliach to do it. Mitzvah that comes up at the end of the parsha that almost everybody points a shaliach is prismila. Very few fathers circumcise their own children. It is much better to have an expert do it. So there we have a shaliach do it. But otherwise, it's better for us to do a mitzvah. If I can do a chesed, it's better for me myself to do it than for other people to do it. Right? That direct connection is a much better thing. So that's something Hashem demonstrates that, and we see this in Pesach come up, that that Hashem himself took us out of Egypt, that Hashem maybe has malachim who can be carried out to do missions. Hashem sends malachim to destroy Sodom and Amorah, But when it comes to blessing Abraham, he does it himself. I'll make your name great, that your name will be exalted throughout throughout the world. Right. So in what ways is Aram's name made great? So one of the commentaries on Tanchuma explains that it's through wealth and glory. I think it's always good to remember that Judaism is not an ascetic religion. It does not frown upon wealth and glory. But that wealth is only good when it comes from Hashem, and we recognize that it comes from Hashem. But Agad Hashemecha, I'm going to make your name great. Right, which contrasts between the word that Abraham has with the Malachim, he has the five kings versus the four kings, and look, it's captured. Abraham says, "Loads." So, Malki Tzedek, the Malach of Shalem, so he wanted to thank Abraham for defeating his enemies, and he wanted to give him, and he wanted to give Abraham reward for it. And Avram says, Avram, I won't even take a shoelace from you. I won't even take a thread or a sandal strap from you, because I don't want you to be able to say, I made Avram rich. Who makes Avram rich? Hashem makes Avram rich. And I think that's something powerful that we can remember as well. That when it says that you will be a blessing, so your blessing comes before my blessing. So, Batchila Omrim, Batchila Omrim Magen Avraham. The first bracha Shmona Esrei is Magen Avraham. Acharkach Mechaye Hametim. And then the next bracha is Mechaye Hametim. The second bracha is Mechayim Etim. So Avram gets mentioned first, and Mechayim Etim gets mentioned second. So of course, both of these brachas really speak to our Shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects Avraham and protects his descendants. Second bracha, of course, is also Hashem's, it speaks of Hashem's glory, that he's Mechayim Etim. So what does it mean that Avraham sort of precedes Hashem and the brachot? So I think maybe what's going on there is that Tchiyat HaMetim is more demonstrable of Hashem's glory, right? When everyone who's dead comes to life, so that's going to be a very clear example of Hashem being revealed in the world. That's the vision of Yom HaMashiach, that everybody's going to recognize that there's one God. Not necessarily that they'll be Jewish, but they recognize that there's one God. So that's that. But Magen Avraham is a much more private and less grandiose way of revealing themselves. It's not necessarily something that's so glamorous, and it's also more altruistic, which perhaps suggests that before Hashem does his glory of Tchiyas HaMesim, he wants to protect Aram. He wants to do, you know, the things that are less glamorous, the things that are maybe more subtle, more private, but they're not purely for Hashem's glory the same way, right? Which I think is something for us to understand, that you know, we have sort of two opportunities. So to put somebody else and their needs before ourselves is important. But that's a message of the Yebracha, that Hashem's, that Aaron's bracha comes before Hashem's bracha. Another explanation of the Yebracha. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishash Barati Alami, Hayiti Zakuk Levarech Briyotai. Hashem says, from the moment I created the world, it was necessary for me to bless my creations. Hashem blessed Adam and Chava. So Hashem blessed Adam and Chava. Hashem blessed Noah and his sons, as we see last week. And from here on, you shall confer blessings. Avram will be conferring blessings. Right? Avram But it's a generation going for it. So I think this is a beautiful thing. That Hashem is zakuk. That word zakuk is a very strong word of implying a need. That Hashem needed to bless his creation. But shows Hashem's need to give to others. Why did Hashem create the world? Hashem created the world to do chesed. Torah begins with chesed. Torah ends with chesed. But it shows Hashem need to give to others, and in our aspect of imitating God, so it's important that we also, that we should be people who are needing to give, that of course receiving is also important. We'll get to that in a second, but it's also very important to have sort of that giving orientation. That need to give is a very godly thing. I'm going to skip this next part for the sake of time. And it goes on, Vavarcha mevarechecha. Those who I bless, you will bless. I will bless those who bless you. Amar lo, atid ani lamim mnei vanecha, shevet shemevarech Yisrael. I will cause to descend from among you sons that will bless Israel. Zeo shevet levi. That is the tribe of Levi. So Amar lefanam, ribono sho'ol. Mevarech lo to shevet. So then Avram asks Hashem, so who's going to bless Shevet Levi? Shevet Levi is blessing Klal Yisrael. So who's going to bless Levi? When they bless Yisrael, I will bless them. That the Kohanim will bless Bnei Yisrael, and I will bless them. So who's the them? So maybe the them is on Klal Yisrael, that when the Kohanim are blessing the nation, that Hashem is also blessing Klal Yisrael through that. It could also be right to understand that Hashem is blessing the Kohanim. So Amar Lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, but Olam Hazeh Shevet Levi Mevarech Etchem, and this world Shevet Levi blesses you, the Latiyad Avot, Ani Bichvodi Yevarech Etchem. So again, this is Hashem himself coming to bless. Shem Yivarecha Hashem Nevei Tzedek Har HaKadosh. Where the Lord blessed be Hashem, O habitation of righteousness, the mountain of holiness. So I think this has a profound idea that in order to give to others, we also sort of need something ourselves. We have to have something to give. Okay, so we often talk about the importance of being giving. People should be charitable. People should be baalei chesed. But you can't run on an empty tank. Right? If you don't have anything in your bank account, you have nothing left to give to tzedakah. So this demonstrates that the rule of Shevet Levi is to bless Klal Yisrael, and that's something that was guaranteed to Abraham. But at the same time, a very interesting idea that in order to, that Hashem has to give to Levi, because in order for them to give, they have to have something to give. I think it's something that we need to remind ourselves sometimes, that we have to make sure that in order to be our most giving selves, so we have to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves the best way possible. But we see from this, and the Baal Turim has this idea that Avarcha mevarechecha, that this pasuk you call is the same gematria as you Kohanim mevarchin banecha, that the Kohanim will be the one to bless your children, right? Avarcha mevarechecha has the same gematria as you Kohanim mevarchin banecha. That's what the Baal HaTurim comes up with. So we see from this medrash the centrality of giving bracha to others, that that's what Hashem wants to do, that's what Hashem created this world to do. And he models it with Avraham Avinu so that his future descendants will do it. Chesed is one of the things that the world stands on. Avraham is identified with Chesed. So it's a merit of Avraham that the world exists due to his Chesed. So we see the value of giving bracha from this medrash. I'm going to end with one last medrash. A lot of interesting things here. I think this one is very, this one's very powerful. So, Achar Advarim Ha'ela. So, after the war that Abraham has with the kings, after all this happens, so Zeus Shamar Hakasuk, Rasha Osepuas Shaker, Zeret Stakas Sacharamas. The wicked earn false wages, but one who sows righteousness in the world will have reward. So Rasha Osef Ula Shakar is a Nimrod HaRasha. So the wicked one who earns all his wages, refers to Nimrod, who, for the most part, we identify with somebody that Abraham dealt with in Ur. He's the one who threw him into the fiery furnace. But the Medrash at another point actually identifies Nimrod as one of the kings. Let's see if I can figure Achsham Yerushalayim. I don't remember which. It might have been Amraphel. Amraphel was the one that is identified with Nimrod. So the idea that Nimrod was fighting in the world. So Nimrod was someone who othed slamu matzah brios. He was somebody who made idols and led people astray. Shenim shalav vodazara l'shaker. That vodazara is likened to falsehood. It is falsehood. So that's Nimrod. Nimrod is the Rasha. But Zerayt Staka Sacher Emes, but one who sows righteousness shall receive a word. Ze Avraham. This is Avraham Avinu. Shezaret Staka Vayamachil over Meshavim. This is somebody who, so Avraham was somebody who would feed those who were passing by. So we see that in Parshat Vayera with when the angels walk by and Avraham goes down and greets them and brings them in. But this already gets brought up in the Midrash in Lech Lecha, that Avraham was sowing righteousness through his feeding others. Shenemar, Reita Eshel B'Vereshav V'Kar B'Sham B'Shem Hashem El Olam. Hashem planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheva and called there upon the name of Hashem, the everlasting God. So he was already feeding people, but also teaching them Shem Hashem. So after he would feed and give them drink, after he would feed them and give them drink, so they would bless him. They would bless him. They would thank him, right? They're nice people. They would thank him. He would say to them, you're blessing me. You're thanking me. Thank the real owner. Thank the one who's giving everybody food and drink. Where is he? Where is this guy? Amar Lahem Shalit B'Shamayim Va'aretz. He is ruling over the heaven and the earth. Umemi Sumachaya gives life. He causes death and gives life. Mochets V'Rofe. He afflicts and heals. Tarsa Uba Mimei Ima Motzio Lavir Olam. So he forms the embryo in the womb of its mother and brings it to the world. Megadet Tzmachim V'Lanos. He causes plants and trees to grow. Mori Sha'ol V'Ya. And he casts man down to Sheol and lifts him up again. When they would hear this, so this is true. Oh, so the person we have to thank is a person who gives life and gives food and drink, that he's the owner of the world. Okay, so now we know he's everywhere. He does everything. So how are we going to thank him? So Aaron would explain. He taught them the phrase, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Lelamvad, Baruch Nosim Lecha Mazon L'chol Basar, and he give them this bracha, Baruch Nosein Lecha Mazal Chobasar, which sounds like the first bracha of our benching. And Aaron will teach them blessings and righteousness. Then the Midrash goes on to say, Hush Amar Kasuv, it's a nefesh asher asu b'charan. So earlier, in the first aliyah, it says that Aaron took the nefesh asher asu b'charan, the souls that they made in Charan. So it's a very strange phrase, the souls they made in Charan. What does that mean? People that they owned, like what? So Amar Rabbi Alexandri, Amale Niskansu Kol Abrios Lasos Yat Tushecha Inchulin Lasos. So if everyone wanted to get together and wanted to form a mosquito and put a human soul into it, they wouldn't know how to do it. Right? Maybe nowadays we could figure out how to sort of breed a mosquito, but to put a human life in it, we wouldn't know how to do it. So Mao Nefeshera Asos, what does it mean, the souls that they made? Jemalamdam Yura Shamayim Mumorala Hanasat Torah. It would teach them Yira Shemaim, fear of heaven, and teach them the Torah. So Unklus actually, it's interesting that Unklus actually translates this here. This is interesting. So Unklus is the Aramaic translation of the Torah. I need the Targumim. Targum. So Unklus says that Aram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and everything, etc. So not just the souls they made, but the souls that they brought to the Torah in Haran. So Uncles understands it that way as well, that the souls that they made in Haran are the souls that they brought closer to Torah. And that's the basis of the Rashi that says that Avram would convert the men and Sarai would convert the women. So you sowed righteousness and made my name known throughout the world. You're going to take reward for that. Your reward is very great. So it's in this where it says it's the acharat v'ma'ela after the war, and Hashem and Aaron's trying to reckon what's going on, what's going to be for me in the future, and Kadosh Baruch Hu promises reward. So Hashem promises reward because at the end of the day, Avram is the one who made Hashem's name known and taught people Torah. What I love about this particular iteration, I've seen different iterations of this notion that Avraham converted people, taught people Torah. What I love about this iteration is that it shows that it's not that he went standing on the street corners and giving out pamphlets and yelling about God the way people sort of yell about Jesus, Lahav Yofe Avdolos. It wasn't this open proselytization, but it was the fact that Aaron genuinely had God on his tongue, and he talked about God. And when people would thank him, he just, without making a big deal about it, he just taught them, you know, my view is that you don't thank me, but you thank the person who actually gave us something, which is God, and he explained it to them. That's what we call an education. A, teaching by example, that he taught by example, but also teachable moments. I think that's sometimes if you want to know how to, Dale Carnegie wrote this famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and everyone wants to know how to influence people. We want to know how to influence others. Well, yeah, Ram did it was through teachable moments, that he took these moments when people came to him and they were genuinely being nice and they were thanking him. He said, listen, this is the Torah that I have to teach. And he didn't grandstand it or whatever, but he just made it, just showed how it was a part of his life and made it seem so obvious. And that's perhaps something a way for us in many aspects of life, whether it's teaching about Judaism, teaching about Derech Eretz, and the like, is that sometimes we just show it by example. And we take the moments where we sort of seamlessly sort of tie it in, that we can demonstrate that a Kaddish Baruch Hu is on our task. Okay, so hope everyone enjoyed. Great to see you. And see you on Shabbos.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay. Good night, everybody.